The media of Walter Cronkite and company is a lot different than what we get today.
Well, and it's gone. It's gone.
Yeah, I emailed you in reference to that Wall Street thing. A friend of mine sent me an article from the UK, you know, the newspaper. And I had not heard a thing about it. And Bob, what bothers me more...
And shame on me that I haven't mentioned it. What you're talking about is the Occupy Wall Street event, and Dr. Flowers mentioned it in our conversation. Started over the weekend, had huge participation. And it was crickets in the for-profit media. So shame on me as a non-member of the for-profit media for not mentioning it, and I'm glad you brought it up.
And Bob, my computers are constantly tuned to Hartman. I even listen to Schultz because of his labor standpoint. Stephanie and her bunch kill me. I wake up laughing in the morning, but I don't hear a word about this Wall Street thing. It's like, wait a minute, you guys are supposed to be on that side of the dial here, folks. How come nobody mentions it? And these are people who are in the line of politics, supposedly, that we are.
And I don't know what the answer to that is right off the bat, except, and this is not as meant as a criticism of anybody, I think, for starters, I think Stephanie Miller serves, and that genius gang that she has around her, they serve a vital purpose. Because being able to laugh and get your day started with a laugh, it's like orange juice. You know, it's how the day ought to start. It's, you know, it's the bagel with the cream cheese that gets the day going.
Deflating windbags has a pleasant sound to it when they do it.
Mm-hmm. Because it never seems overtly mean. You know, I'm mean, and I know I am. But
you too.
But,
I am. I know.
But they do it with such good humor and grace, and such brains. But you've also got to. And again, this is not a criticism, and I don't want hate mail. Or, oh, how dare you?
No.
These are shows that are operating within the structure of for-profit media.
For-profit media. Yeah. It's just that this idea of going to Wall Street and raising Cain should be mentioned.
Well, yeah, but by the same token, you know, I watch my Twitter feed and everything, and I'm sorry, I remember everybody's voice, but tell me again, please, the first name.
My name's William.
Yeah, William, okay.
I'm from up here in the city where your dad was in the hospital.
Okay. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. How can I get at this? I was watching my Twitter feed, and it drove me a little bit crazy because there were even people on our side saying things like, "Oh, great, Occupy Wall Street on a Saturday when there's nobody there." Well, that's smart.
It's a good start.
It's a good start. And you know what? On a Saturday and a Sunday when there's nobody there, that's when you establish your ground.
Yep.
You know, you don't go take ground that's already held. You take the ground when it's not occupied, so then they have to deal with you.
Bob, some of the best fishing I did was after I flew over the lake in a seaplane type thing, and I could spot all the weed beds and drop-offs and knew where to put the boat because I picked my ground out. I picked my out where I was going to work, you know. And they're doing the same thing, and it should be done because this is the main difference that I see between the 60s and now is the money game. I see Wall Street has a history of this, though. My granddad taught me when I was a kid about a panic in the 1890s, a depression.
And that was the whole reason for regulating the economy was because America, in many ways, is a long history of economic upheavals. You know, there was the Great Panic of this year and the Depression of that year, and it was just a constant boom and bust cycle through, and it ruined people. And, you know, you always had a cadre of very, very rich people who benefited no matter which way the pendulum swung.
Swung, yes.
But yeah, the vast majority of Americans who were caught between the hammer and the tongs on the anvil.
Yeah, that was the first thing that got me going was discovering the music of Woody Guthrie and the Depression era songs that he wrote. A Dust Bowl Refugee and Hard Traveling and of course Steinbeck, which things the kids don't read in school anymore. Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath, for instance, used to be, you had to read it when I was a kid.
Right, but now, well, I'm sure that there's some church group out there, or God knows, David Horowitz and that creepy crowd. Well, they're just trying to turn them into little liberal pinkos.
Well, those were tough times, and I mean, like my friends, I said, you know how long those great country performers ended up in Bakersfield? I think most of them went out there in the Dust Bowl days, and the family settled, and these guys became great performers of country music, you know. And things happen for, there's usually a reason behind things happening, and I was on the radio last night on a local college station, and we got a call while I was on the air from a guy in Texas who got on the air and just slanged Perry from one end of Texas to the other.
Oh, he is not the monolithically popular man that they would have you believe. And among other things, he's got problems right now because all of a sudden, for some reason or another, Texas has begun hemorrhaging jobs. And it might be because there's no damn money to support the jobs anymore, because the jobs that were the Texas Rick Perry miracle were government jobs that he didn't like in the first place unless he could pull them around in a little red wagon to make some pretense of having created them. You know, the governor of Texas is one of, if not the least powerful governors in the entire United States. I mean, pathetic.
Yeah, very little power in the governor's chair in Texas, yes. Compared to, Ohio for sure.
You know, to suggest that a Texas governor somehow does this or that with the economy, it's fantasy to begin with, because there's not that much to do. There's not that much government there. You know, ask the unemployed, ask the homeless, ask the uninsured in their millions in Texas how proactive the government is. And well, it's not.
Yeah. It's not productive at all. And they've, you know, there's so many things that I've been through because of the accident of when you were born. You guys will see a hell of a lot more of it than I am, and I feel real bad. I have grandkids, and you have children that are at that age. You have grandkids, too, don't you?
Yeah, I do. The oldest one is 4, and I'm scared.
Yeah, because we don't know what they're gonna face. I mean, when I was growing up, you know, I grew up poor in a housing project, but you could move away from it if you could challenge yourself to go out and work at something, because there was work.
Yeah.
And that's what kids today don't get, because they didn't see it. They don't think about it. And a friend of mine is a retired history teacher, and he claims that the teaching of history has changed. And he's in a suburban system one county east of us, where I am now. And he claims that, you know, he can't teach the way he used to. They don't, you know, the books and such aren't the same. And you don't teach things. You don't teach the truth. I enjoy the Marine. What's he from, Florida?
Is Mark, Mark. Mark.
Yeah, when he brought out that thing on Pat Robertson, I had seen that in the book, but the author wouldn't name the guy. But I thought of him right away because I knew his father had been a senator. And I mean, I learned so much from the people. Sandra can leave me in the dust, you know, she gets,
No, she leaves me in the dust, too, and I mean, but it's mind-expanding, isn't it?
Yep, And Albert, he's my kind of guy. That guy is, I relate right away to him.
Yeah, Albert got fan mail over the weekend, people saying, oh, yeah. You know, I'm just, you know.
Well, he's an enjoyable guy. The whole show is, I'm going to hang on him. It's the first time I ever called, and I'm not real big on calling, but.
Well, you've done fine, though. I mean, you know, you haven't felt like you were going to fall over or anything. You're doing just great, William.
Well, I used to do it locally here, but Cleveland is down to one local talk show, and it's a guy who used to be a guy who called in to sports talk shows as a client, as a caller. And his, well, there used to be a TV show or radio show about a guy like this. He's called Pays to be Ignorant. That was an old radio show and TV show in the 50s. But, we're talking about, I'll leave you with one thought about Wall Street. Yeah, the stock market mess destroyed my grandfather's business. Yeah, some stockbroker jumped out a window and landed right on his push cart. Anyway, you have a good one. I'll talk to you again.
He'll be here all week. Try the veal. Don't forget to tip your waitress.
Oh, yes. Hey, if you can't laugh once in a while, you know, it's either, gee, shall I laugh or shall I look for the cyanide, you know?
Yeah, right, and, you know, keep laughing. Although I got to tell you, there was a story, speaking of Sandra, she sent me a story out of Georgia this weekend. A woman was killed and several others were sent to the hospital. You mentioning cyanide reminded me. Because of some vapor or gas or something that got loose at a McDonald's.
Oh, so, for crying out loud.
So, you know, until they get it sorted, stay away from McDonald's, will you?
Well, Bob, I hate to even think about the food that I eat today because God only knows what agribusiness put the stuff together and the inspections under GW, the inspectors did a disappearing act. And as you know, if you're not part of the industry, under Bush, you didn't get an inspection job or a job to keep something. Well, I'm talking to you. Look at the coal mining industry. And Matewan was one of the best movies I think I ever saw.
It is an amazing film. And you know, it's funny. There's a couple of different lines from that film that are just, they're like stock call and response inside my family. After a particularly bad day, we'll get in the vehicle and I'll look at Agnes and say, "Let's roll, Griggsy." And she'll respond, "The sooner we get out of this shithole, the better." Yeah,
to me, I have that strong sense of, man, at the end of the thing when the whole town and the Baldwin Phelps guys are running into the river, I said, yes. Because, well, we know, you like Dashiell Hammett, I know, from writing back and forth. And Hammett, of course, worked for the Pinkertons.
Yeah, he was a Pinkerton man.
Yeah, that's where he got his, they said he could follow a drop of water from the west coast of China and never lose it. He was the shadow man.
And, you know, you really see that in terms of his writing. There's not a lot of it available on Kindle, and I'm a complete Kindle freak now, William.
Well, I get by with the audio books, you know.
Yeah, but there's one book of his called Red Harvest.
Yes.
And it's really, really dated, but it's it really gives you a sense for the fact that this guy had Dashiell Hammett had honed his chops as an operative.
Yeah.
And he really brings out what an amoral undertaking it was in the first place.
Well, there's so much in Hammett and in Chandler. Will you get a picture of the society at the time these men were writing, a part of the society that never gets talked about?
Yeah. Even the Thin Man stories are that way, even though it's supposedly the upper crust is like that. And I got to tell you, I don't know if it's out for an audiobook. You'll have to check. But I just finished today reading this Richard K. Morgan novel, Market Forces, and I can't say enough good about it. And you get to the end of the book and he gives you a list of books that he read in preparation for writing the book. Now it's fiction and it's set about 50 years in the future, not 500 but 50, And the top of the list is Noam Chomsky.
Oh, my.
And he also read Michael Moore. And you can see, and once you, and you don't see it till you get to the end of the book, but you see the bleed over in it. And what he's done is he's extrapolated predatory corporate culture by about 50 years into the future just to see where it goes. And it is, you know, a great plot and character development, but there are some observations along the way that you just have to sit, you got to go back and check it out again, because there's it's just freighted with so much truth. The same way that Raymond Chandler was, the same way that Dashiell Hammett was.
Well, the classic Chandler story, where he's one of the villains is a doctor who takes care of Hollywood drunks and druggers, and this is like 1940, I think it was. I think it was Lady in the Lake this guy was part of, this character. And this is, I remember when Michael Jackson passed away with this doctor's stuff. I said, so what else is new? Look at Elvis and the doctors, what they were doing with him.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have enough dough, you can, hell, I knew about five guys that were getting a prescription for morphine every day from an old doctor here in the 60s. It was costing them $1.50 a day, and the doctor got busted. Now here's these five suburban kids trying to get $150 a day for smack, you know, for heroin.
Yeah.
And man, well, these guys are out of place. I mean, these guys, yeah, be right. My dad got popped in 46 with a pound of reefer. But what saved his butt was that my uncle, my dad's brother, worked for the guy that ran the an organization not far from where Cleveland Clinic is. I don't know how far away from the clinic you got when you were in town with your dad.
Well, we drove straight into the middle of town and turned right on Euclid, you know.
Yeah, because at 93rd Street, if you came out of there in 1960 and walked east on Euclid, you'd be in the middle of what would have to be called Cleveland Storyville in 1960. Because I was hanging out there when I was 17. I was one of these kids who wanted to learn quickly, you see. And I did. I learned too quickly some ways. Anyway, you go ahead on and be careful and enjoy, you know, enjoy the time in Kentucky. You will meet several wonderful people, I'm sure.
Oh,
what's Joe Bajan's other book beside the one I just got through twice now?
Deer Hunting with Jesus is the first one.
Yeah.
And then Rainbow Pie.
Rainbow Pie, that's the one I could remember, yeah.
And then there's a book of his essays coming out.
Okay, because a friend of mine who I recommended the book to, a woman, she wrote back to me and said, you know, there's stuff of his on the net.
Yeah, those are the essays, but not but Rainbow Pie is not, and Deer Hunting with Jesus isn't.
Yeah, I usually get them through the Library of Congress, but if I can get them on audio, I'll spring for it. I put the money away for a couple months, and
right.
I'm retired now, you know, and I don't play like I used to, that's for sure. In a way, I don't miss it, because music business has got it.
Yeah, but by God, I've got the evidence to prove it. You could make a harp holler.
Yeah, I was a player in my youth. I was lucky. There's positives to everything, Bob. Being around the projects in the 1950s and listening to them stuff my neighbors were playing on their phonographs opened my eyes to a whole new type of music and said, "Oh my!" And then in the 60s there was that big revival. Bunch of guys from Chicago got it, kicked it. In fact, the thing Help, the movie, I know one guy whose Help was instrumental in his life, and that was guitar player Michael Bloomfield, because the woman who did the housekeeping brought, you know, tuned the radio to blues, and Bloomfield was a tremendous player when he was alive. And
indeed,
what you're exposed to sometimes is... you know, you learn from every culture.
Well, and that's why I try to expose. You know, Ferg is the house musician here, and growing and learning by leaps and bounds. And that's why I try to expose him to as much different stuff as I possibly can.
Well, Bajan talks about playing walking blues, and I'm dying, because that's one of my songs that I've loved forever since Robert Johnson and then Paul Butterfield cut a great version, and I recorded it myself. And, you know, it's been good to me. Hey, it's been good talking to you, man, and just hang in. That's all I can say.
Thank you, William. Awful good talking to you. I'm so glad you called.
Thank you, sir.
Bye now. William calling from the Cleveland area. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Get the fuck off.
What? What? Nah, you. Waited all that time to say that. Nice. So, we come to the end of the program. And I'll catch you Tuesday, a week from tomorrow. Remember, we have a Dr. Bill PRISM West Virginia History Chat coming up a week from tonight. And that'll start, I think, about 7:30. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this work. It is much appreciated. You with your contributions, your ideas, your chat in the chat room. Lottie, Sparky, our chat room moderators, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, Reverbo, our op-ed columnist at headonradionetwork.com, a cavalcade of crazy, my head writer and spiritual advisor, David in Tennessee, who writes a pretty mean one-liner, too, you might note, from earlier this evening. And John Fox, who is terribly, terribly busy these days, but still finds time to help keep things going around here. Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Never sends a bill, but always needs your help. He makes all the streams do what the streams do here at the Horn. Now, of course, the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Membership is cheap and easy. Join Coal River Mountain Watch at the website and become a part of the solution. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next. Catch you next week, y'all.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Okay, sorry about yesterday. My doctor's appointment was scheduled for 3:45. I didn't get home until 7. And it's not because it was all that complicated. Things just get backed up. And I can't fault my doc too much. He's one of those people who takes a great deal of time with patients. And henceforward, I will never allow another appointment to be scheduled anything later than 11:45. Okay? Yeah. So it's about 2 minutes past the hour. We're a day late getting started on the week. I feel terrible about that. Actually, I was supposed to be on the air last night so that I could be over at a citizen meeting relating to the mine complex, the mountaintop removal complex, where they're going to blow Fayette County to be Jesus this evening. But having missed last night, I had to take a pass on that. We can't do two nights in a row. We simply can't. It looks like we could just as well cue up the Moran Monday music, because I don't know about you, but I actually did sit and watch the pig licking pageant, the tea bait, if you will. The really inappropriately presented CNN teabagger debate. I mean, really, CNN. Oh, that was just sad. Brought to you, of course, by Big Coal, killing thousands of Americans every year against their will and without their consent. Big Coal, job creators. See, if we were doing video, you'd see my most winning smile, like this. Yeah, aren't you glad? Nah, it was a silly thing, and we will get to it in good time. There was a soundbite, I'll just say this right off the bat. There was a soundbite from Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman last night that I hope against hope that NARAL, the National Abortion Rights Action League, and the National Organization for Women, and every pro-choice organization in the country picked up and has ready to roll. It came in the HPV vaccination discussion, in which Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum, otherwise known as Bro Fromix, got himself all head up over the vaccination. But Michelle Bachman got head up too, and I mean she went right after Rick Goodhair Perry, saying, and I quote, "Well, I'm offended for all those little girls who didn't have a choice." Ow! Yeah, I about what'd you say, Willis? Yeah, she actually said, "I'm offended for all the little girls who didn't have a choice." If anybody in the liberal progressive messaging universe has even the tiniest lick of sense, that will be on PSAs all over America in defense of a woman's right to choose. Michelle Bachman. I'm just offended for all those little girls who didn't have a choice. But as I said, more on that later. As you know, the September 11th anniversary has come and gone, and probably enough has been said about it. But I sat just sort of simmering away on Sunday, and I'm not going to let it go by without just a couple of remarks and without a note from our pal John in New York, Dr. John, that is. I wasn't thinking, to be honest. I wasn't thinking when I got up on Sunday morning and turned on the television. Or actually, I was thinking, and what I was thinking was I wanted to go and watch me some NFL pregame. I'm shallow that way. I do have to escape a little bit now and then. And college and NFL football do it for me in the fall. Around March, it'll be March Madness. Yeah. Much more of a college guy than professional, but yeah, on Sundays, you know, absent of religion, Sundays are for NFL. But in the commercials, like a dummy, I went scanning around and I landed on ABC, where they were having a solemn memorial for the 10th anniversary of September 11th, 2001. It was curiously found wanting, ABC's memorial was, of a single image of George Bush sitting there with that bemused, sort of half-sedated look on his face and my pet goat turned upside down in his lap. Those moments, that half an hour in that elementary school in Florida, it wasn't there. And it was pretty depressing because it was largely an exercise in absolutely not having any interest whatsoever, even 10 years later, in understanding why September 11th, 2001 happened. A lot of minor key music on ABC. Diane Sawyer and George Snuffleupagus looking very somber and solemn. No insight whatsoever. But every so often, they would say, and we'll be back with more of the memorial service right after these messages. And the first time that happened... By the way, hi, I'm Bob. Okay. The first time that happened, it kind of clanked for me, sort of like an off note being hit in the middle of a song that where you just know, just eh. And what? Wait, huh? Because it something was simply wrong. And then as I sat there looking at the screen and heard, you know, get a bucket of chicken. No, that wasn't there. That's just an old jingle. No, it was something like, and I brought you healthy, good McDonald's oatmeal with fruit today. Some ad. And Johnny, don't forget your Quaker oat squares. And if your toenails swell to 3 times the size of a Frisbee, you might need Pradaxa. Ask your doctor about Pradaxa. Commercial after commercial after commercial. And it just triggered something icky, or it triggered the icky response inside me. Now, here's a multi-billion-dollar broadcast empire, ABC, owned by Disney, which has been uber-shameless and uber-patriotic, supposedly, in advancing the tropes and memes of the government, the Bush administration, in the days after 9/11. And it just rang hollow. Now, later on in the day, several times during the NFL, I would see some sort of State Farm commercial or something like that, where some children were singing... about New York. That was okay. But the more I thought about it, the more upset I got. This solemn, somber, sad reminder of a horrible day in recent American history, supposedly the defining day for this generation or this period of time in the United States. And I just had this image of some advertising sales creep at ABC just selling ads for another Sunday and another day with George and Diane and Christian. And I got the shivers. They were hustling McDonald's hamburgers on the bones of the dead. They were hustling Quaker oat squares, snack bars, granola snacks, what the hell ever. They were hustling them on the bones of the dead. They were hustling prescription medications on the bones of the dead. They were hustling Samsung televisions on the bones of the dead. And I tweeted it, and it carried over to my Facebook, and a couple of bemused people said, well, Bob, they have to sell commercials to stay in business. No, they don't. No, they don't. They make lots of money. Oh, by the way, also locally dropped here in West Virginia because we've got a gubernatorial election here in about 3 weeks. Repig-licking attack ads against the loopy, sort of sleazy friend of Cole Democrat who's running for governor here. Again, on the bones of the dead. There are ways to do this, you know. And the more I thought about it, the angrier I got. I think I mentioned on Friday evening that I'm a golf fan. I'm enough of a golf fan that, yes, I will actually watch golf on television. I know. Sad, isn't it? But there's a very famous golf tournament. Happens in the spring of the year. It's called the Masters. CBS carries it. It is carried with what they call limited commercial interruption. A golf tournament. A little bit later in the day, not too much later, I scanned over to NBC and saw that the Rugby World Cup match between Ireland and the United States was about to be played. It was in tape delay. It wasn't even live. Not being a diehard rugby fan, I didn't know the outcome until, thanks, Spike! Spike told me that we had been righteously trounced by the Irish. Thanks, Spike. Kidding. But I watched. And there was not a single commercial interruption during the entire first half of play. Not one. By NBC. So let's recap. NBC, rerun of a rugby match, no commercial interruption. Every spring, CBS Sports, the Masters Golf Tournament, a standing memorial to misogyny and bigotry and prejudice. Limited commercial interruptions. A somber, solemn 10th anniversary memorial service for the dead and wounded and the weak and the weary of September 11th, 2001. Oatmeal square ads. Pathetic gray disc of meat ads from McDonald's. Prescription medicine ads. Television ads. There were a lot more. Those are just the four that I caught when I started thinking about it. Samsung, Pradaxa, McDonald's, and Quaker Oats. I guess I should just consider myself lucky that there wasn't an ad for an airline anywhere in there. Or maybe consider myself lucky that there wasn't an ad for Greyhound. Hi, we're Greyhound. We've never brought down a building. Take the bus and leave the war on terror to us. But it could have been sold. That's just sickening even to say it. It could have been sold with limited commercial interruption. It could have been marketed so that the people, the companies purchasing ads, instead of just running another one of their day-in, day-out, just another day of hustling meaningless crap to a credulous public ads, they could have had, "Hi, we're McDonald's. On this solemn occasion, we just want you to know that we're proud to help bring you this memorial event." You know, nothing fancy. It would have generated goodwill, and you wouldn't have had a 48-year-old hillbilly elitist crank sitting in front of his television screen screaming, "Mercenaries! Bloodthirsty, blood-sucking!" Right. Because that's what they were. That's what that was. It was mercenary. Not even the faintest glimmer of tastefulness, of respect. You can almost hear the meeting in the sales department that week. "Okay, Bill, you're going to take the... You've got this week. Of course, that's going to be the 9/11 memorial service. Just sell it like any other Sunday. See what kind of crap we can wedge in there." Because that's what it was. And what it was disgusting. Yeah, I fired off a few notes. Not that it's going to make any difference, but I did. "Dear McDonald's, it'll be a cold day in hell the next time I walk into one of your establishments. After seeing that your same old, hustle another hamburger ads were running in the middle..." You know, what I just said. And another one went to Samsung, and another one went to Pradaxa, and another one went to the Quaker Oats Company. Although I must say that is a lovely likeness of Barbara Bush that they're using on their oatmeal containers. So that was how Sunday got started. And there were still people... "I don't understand, Bob. It's not the corporation's fault. They've got to sell it somehow." And it all goes back, I suppose, to that Robert F. Kennedy line. Some see things as they are and ask why. I see things as they could be and ask why not. But in for-profit media world, every minute of every day is just another opportunity to make a buck. And the whole world rotates on its axis and revolves around the sun for no other larger purpose than to make a buck. And I can't help wondering what kind of sad, sorry, misguided lives those kinds of people lead. Because if I was doing that in the middle of it, I realized, wait a minute, I'm hustling hamburgers on the bones of the dead. I think I'd have to check in somewhere. Or check out. Because that's just a little much. You know, during the entirety of the ABC coverage, there was a scrolling list of the dead that went back and forth behind Diane and George Snuffleupagus. We'll be back with more scrolling names of the dead after we've sold you a hamburger. just sounds kind of nasty when you think of it in that light, doesn't it? Well, that's because it was kind of nasty. Maybe even, I don't know, evil. The ceremony itself was done, I thought, with appropriate solemnity and taste. It's just that it was impossible to broadcast it that way. I mean, there's all kinds of alternatives. ABC or anybody else could have said, you know what, we're going to just take a tax write-off on this one, and we're going to run the thing without commercials. And we'll write it off as public service, our public service obligation for the year. There were any number of alternatives. But the one that was the default was the one that involved selling a television, a granola bar, a hamburger, right after Mrs. Name and right before Mr. Name. Because the names were still scrolling when they came back. Who did we miss? Whose name did we miss on the screen? Because McDonald's needed to sell a hamburger. And Samsung a TV. And Quaker a granola bar. And Pradaxa, in case your nose mysteriously slides off, Pradaxa may help. Talk to your doctor. Jesus. Then I just, you know, I'm not asking you to live in the same weird little world as I do. But I do find it beneficial, I have to tell you, to sort of spin the cube and look at it on edge instead of staring at the same same quadrangled plane all the time. Because it does look differently from different angles. John had written in Sunday morning as well. I told him I would share this with you yesterday, but, well, we know how yesterday turned out. So I'll share it with you now. Dr. John says, "Hey, Bob, I feel the need to get some thoughts out, and lucky you, you're about the only person around me who I think will get this. So please pardon if this doesn't really hang together. Last night at the Paragraph Factory," John works as a journalist right now. "Last night at the Paragraph Factory, I was tasked with copy editing. Well, the entire news content of my paper. It was a double whammy. All stories for our 9/11 section, plus our continuing flood coverage. It was a busy and profoundly depressing night. I found myself looking forward to editing each new vignette of local people dealing with flood loss, as it was somehow less sad than vignettes about local people who lost relatives on September 11th, 2001. I do not want to remember 9/11. I do not want to watch goddamn news coverage from that day. I absolutely do not want to be watching football tonight, Sunday night, and have to be forced to see men in uniforms, men in suits, men in clergy robes tell me how much we've all changed since that day. Because from where I'm sitting, we haven't changed that much, or maybe we've changed for the worse. What have we learned about the world? And what have we shown the world? We've shown the world that we can live as a haunted people, frightened by every pronouncement from our government about terrorists. We've shown the world that we can continue to pour money into guns and bombs while our cities rot and our people suffer. We'll keep exporting death and destruction, keep extracting resources from less powerful places. We've turned what should have been an opportunity to turn our eyes inward and really take out our national soul and have a good long look at what we value and how we achieve it, and instead turned it into a pageant glorifying guns and gold. Jesus Christ, last night I read a piece about a man who was talking about all he can remember is the color of men's ties as he watched them jump from the World Trade Center. A woman who lives here got a phone call from her husband seconds before he died in the tower. The call was cut off. Their son was born in January 2002. I wouldn't presume to tell those people how they should remember that day, and I'll be goddamned if I'll sit here and be forced to fit my personal memories into some bullshit national narrative about exceptionalism, God's plan, the military-industrial security complex, etc., etc., etc. In the midst of all that, I came across one story. It was about how teachers are dealing with 9/11 in their classes. The following is from a professor at Elmira College near here. Twain's wife was from a powerful family in that town, and he and his family are all buried there. The site is peaceful, beautiful. Elmira College houses his actual custom-built writing building and offers a major in Mark Twain studies. If I'd known that about that 10 years ago, my life would be entirely different. Here's his thoughts from the article. Charlie Mitchell, associate professor of American Studies, said he'll have his students read two Twain essays this weekend as regards patriotism and the war prayer, and discuss them Monday. These pieces come from 1900 and 1901, so his immediate topic is the Spanish-American War of 1898 and 1899, which Twain opposed fairly strongly, Mitchell said. Both pieces kind of call into question one of the prevailing ideas of the day, my country, right or wrong. He's arguing that it's probably better to be thoughtful in one's attitude to one's country than to be a knee-jerk patriot. Mitchell said his goal in the class, Perspectives on the American Dream, is to get them to think about things as being more complicated than simple. In the case of 9/11, he said, he'll ask students to discuss what is it we're commemorating, what is important, rather than thinking about who the bad guys and the good guys are. John continues, there. That's the kind of introspection I think this day calls for. I plan to read both of those tonight, before or after work, because what's really missing amid this orgy of self-pity is the idea that maybe, just maybe, we ought to make some changes about how we think of ourselves and our place in the world. And that's exactly the kind of thinking that will not be present. The people who died were indeed victims, but not of evildoers without motivation. They were victims of our own greed, power lust, and hubris. If we don't want them to have died in vain, then we cannot put their deaths off to God's will, random acts of misfortune, or some eternal struggle between right us and wrong them. I don't know what a fitting tribute would be except continuing to live American values, the ones we talk about a lot but so often fail to practice, liberty, equality, freedom, prosperity, none of which result from war, surveillance, arbitrary detention, or fear. John closes saying, thanks for letting me rant a bit. Now I'm off to scrub down my basement, then locate some Twain to read. I don't think it could be better said. You know, all around the country there were 9/11 commemorations. There was one at Mountaineer Field in Morgantown, West Virginia. This was a commemoration that took place right before the football team ran onto the field after having reverently touched a 350-pound lump of coal that came from the upper Big Branch mine, where 29 men died for nothing more or less than unmitigated, shameful, sickening human greed. Ron and Raleigh writing in. Bob, you poor man. Hey, Bob, how else can Michael Eisner be paid a gazillion dollars a year without those ads? And Michael Eisner is more than happy to hustle hamburgers on the bones of the dead. You want some sinew? Got a quarter pounder here with extra sinew. Char-broiled. David in Tennessee. That's a most flattering choice for Babs' hat on the oatmeal box. Doesn't she look great? Stop with the Quaker oats, says Sandra. Be glad there were no condom ads, says Clayton. Yeah. Because they are shameless. I imagine the only reason there weren't airline ads is because nobody thought to get to them in time. Don't you? I mean, you don't think there would actually be any, shame? Any sense of propriety? In advertising? You're kidding, right? Yeah. But I think if you want proof that, and by the way, another thing, I did Sunday morning, I sent out a note to our good friend Maura, just to tell her I was, we here were thinking about her. She was profoundly affected by September 11th, 2001. And just to share with you what her response was and the perspective of someone who saw it and lived it. Maura wrote back and said, "Thank you so very much for thinking of me today. It means more to me than you will ever know. I am avoiding all TV coverage and not reading any of the newspaper articles. I prefer to remember those that died. Quietly and respectfully." Which is how it should have all been handled. But I don't think you can call hustling hamburgers over singed human flesh either quiet or respectful. Do you understand now? And I realize it's kind of a I don't mean to be insulting when I say this, but do you understand now that there is no limit? There is absolutely no limit to the shameful, shameless depths of commercial greed in this nation. Because I think we would do well to always be cognizant of the fact that there is nothing that a for-profit media outlet will not do to make another godforsaken dollar. How do I know this? I have abundant proof. CNN completely prostituted itself out to the teabaggers last night. They didn't just host what they call a debate, what I call a pageant. They went all in. I mean, sickening. All in. The intro to the teabag pageant last night was absolutely repulsive. With Wolf Blitzer doing the opening announce over it. You would have thought it was Dancing with the Effing Stars. Revolten. It starts now. But the ultimate proof, really, that there will be no learning from September 11th came in an exchange with, of all people, that weird little man from Texas. No, not Rick Perry, Ron Paul. Who dared, and, well, I don't know how to begin this. First of all, you remember when the audience practically masturbated in their seats last week, those Repiglicans, at the mention of how many people Rick Perry had killed in the name of the people of the state of Texas? Remember how they cheered before he even answered the question? And I, by God, don't mean anything tepid either. I mean full-throated, make-yourself-hoarse-hollering. Remember how they did that? Well, there was another one of those moments last night. This is that moment.
Governor, before I get to Michelle Bachmann, I want to just, you're a physician, Ron Paul, so you're a doctor. You know something about this subject. Let me ask you this hypothetical question. A healthy 30-year-old young man has a good job, makes a good living, but decides, you know what, I'm not going to spend $200 or $300 a month for health insurance because I'm healthy, I don't need it. But, you know, something terrible happens, all of a sudden he needs it. Who's going to pay for it if he goes into a coma,
well,
for example?
Who
pays for that?
In a society that you accept welfareism and socialism, he expects the government to take care of
him. What do you want?
But what he should do is whatever he wants to do and assume responsibility for himself. My advice to him would have a major medical policy, but not before...
But he doesn't have that. He doesn't have it, and he needs intensive care for 6 months. Who pays?
That's what freedom is all about, taking your own risks. This whole idea that you have to prepare and take care of everybody.
But, Congressman, are you saying the society should just let him die?
No. Yeah. I practiced medicine before we had Medicaid in the early 1960s when I got out of medical school. I practiced at Santa Rosa Hospital in San Antonio, and the churches took care of them. We never turned anybody away from the hospital, and we've given up on this whole concept that we might take care of ourselves and assume responsibility for ourselves, our neighbors, our friends, our churches would do it. This whole idea, that's the reason the cost is so high. The cost is so high, we cause a dump it on the government, becomes a bureaucracy, it becomes special interest, it kowtows to the insurance companies and the drug companies, and then on top of that you have the inflation. The inflation devalues the dollar. We have lack of competition. There's no competition in medicine. Everybody's protected by licensing. We should actually legalize alternative health care, allow people to practice what they want.
Congressman Bachmann, go ahead and weigh in on...
Any questions? There is a significant portion of our nation that is sick as hell. And I don't mean needs to go to the... Well, I don't mean that has a germ or a bug or a virus. I mean psychotic. I mean broken in the brain. You heard the cheering. They cheered for the notion of letting a 30-year-old hypothetical man just die. Some of them even gave verbiage to it. Let him die! Yeah! A question, simply put. Is that your America? Is that the America my father, my uncle, your father's grandfather's mother's grandmother's struggled to keep afloat during the Great Depression and into the Second World War? Is that the America that they were struggling to perpetuate? Let him die! You know, I don't know. Maybe we can find some middle ground between the Perry people at the one 2 weeks ago who cheered people being executed by the state, and the Ron Paul people who are cheering people being left to die by the state. Maybe we can hang the sick people. How's that? Well, lethal injection is medication, Bob. We live in a very, very sick, disturbing, disturbed country. They cheered the idea of leaving a man to die. Oh, and by the way, here is CNN's intro to that teabag-a-palooza last night.
Tonight, 8 Republicans, 1 goal, to win the White House and kick Barack Obama out. Cheering them on, their powerful allies and fierce critics. The grassroots movement putting a bold stamp on this election. The Tea Party.
You notice their allies are powerful, but their critics are fierce. This can't possibly be coming from a real news network. No, it's coming from TNN.
Tonight's players.
I love America. I'll fight for America.
Mitt Romney, the early frontrunner.
Obamacare.
Focused on attacking the president. Now turning his attention to a more immediate opponent.
I'm going to be a pro-business president, and I'm not going to make any apologies about it.
Rick Perry, the newcomer. He got a late start, then surged to the front of the pack with a conservative voice, folksy, and brash. Michelle Bachmann, the firebrand.
We're here to win.
She aced an early test in Iowa, proving she's a top-tier contender, as well as a lightning rod.
Run, Paul, run.
The rest of the field in search of a breakthrough. John Huntsman, the diplomat, carving a more moderate path to try to defeat his ex-boss, the president. Ron Paul, the libertarian, billing himself as the freedom fighter in the race. Rick Santorum, the fighter, known for throwing hard punches from the right. Herman Cain, the businessman, who plays up his experience as a pizza executive and his inexperience in politics. Newt Gingrich, the big thinker, once the most powerful man in the House, now looking for traction after early stumbles. Tonight, 8 candidates, 1 stage, 1 chance to take part in a groundbreaking debate. The Tea Party's support and the Republican nomination on the line right now.
Florida State Fairgrounds here in Tampa, the site of the first ever Tea Party Republican presidential debate. 1 year from now, right here in Tampa, the Republican National Convention will nominate the Republican candidate for President of the United States. Tonight, 8 contenders will be on this stage to try to convince voters he or she is the best choice to hold the highest office in the country. And joining them inside this hall, Tea Party activists from Florida and across the nation.
Honestly, have you ever heard anything more over the top? Edward R. Murrow, Walter Cronkite, etc., all are having a fit right now. Oh. That really was. That was the intro to a game show or a reality television show. It was everything but one ring to rule them all, one ring to bind them, one ring to get... It's insanity. But then, like I said, proof that there will be no learning about out of the 10th anniversary of September 11th. The other telling moment was when poor little squeaky, weird Ron Paul tried to talk about the fact that maybe 9/11 happened because of the way we behave in the Middle East. And Rick, a napkin is not a bottle of champagne Santorum, the frothy mixture himself. Well, I think if he could have, he would have gone over and killed Ron Paul. 9/11 was not America's fault. And all those teabaggers who had so gloriously cheered when Ron Paul talked about leaving a man in his bed to die, well, it's a little confused. Because all of a sudden they didn't like Ron Paul no more because he wasn't saying America was great for 9/11. He wasn't blaming all them Muslims like he's supposed to. Because he's supposed to. Because they ain't white. Are they? Marveline?
Yeah, I don't know, Emery.
No, there will be no learning. The only introspection will be had by people like us. And, of course, we'll be called un-American. If we point out the fact that, I mean, there was poor Ron Paulson. Did you? And he was kind of leaning over, a little bit beady-eyed at the audience.
Did you know that Osama bin Laden said he wanted us to get off the holy ground of Saudi Arabia, and that's why he done it?
Boo! Boo! Boo!
Did you know that maybe they done it because we treat the Palestinians so poorly? And boo! Really, boo! I liked him. Marveline, I liked him while he was wanting that 30-year-old feller, hypercritical feller to die. I don't know if he's American anymore. That wanting the feller to die part, that was real American. But this looking around and figuring that maybe somehow America wasn't just lily white and innocent. Well, I don't think I like Ron Paul anymore, even though he does want us to have gold currency. And I'd certainly like to have a little jingling gold in my pocket. That fair tax, that sounds pretty good. But not if he's going to talk about America that way, actually talk about the sleazy, tawdry, murderous things that we've done in the Middle East. I don't like talking about that, Marveline. David in Tennessee noting, oh, Lordy Bob. I hope the rest of the world didn't see that. Can you imagine what the Germans or Brits think of that Vegas act? Oh, but they did. And by the way, speaking of other people seeing or hearing how we think, whatever happened to politics ends at the water's edge? Did you happen to notice that right-wing Islamophobe Peter King traveled across the Atlantic Ocean to address a committee of the British Parliament today? Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Peter King told the Parliament that he's all worried about that First Amendment thingy. No, really.
Would you like to see better controls on the Internet, on these social networking sites like Facebook and Twitter?
Yes, I do. Now, we have a First Amendment issue which does not confront you or does not really pertain in Great Britain. So we're trying to find ways how can it be done without violating the First Amendment and involving freedom of speech and communication.
Yeah, he's worried about Muslims getting hold of the Facebook and the Twitter. Never mind the fact that
Well, he supported the Irish Republican Army once upon a time, Peter King did, but, you know, well, youthful indiscretions, I guess. No, actually, he said he stands by his prior statements in support of the IRA, quote, in the context that they were said. I don't think you can say a context. You can make a context, but you can't say one. Lordy, if a Democrat or a liberal went abroad and said something like that, he would be savaged in the American media. And absolutely, the practically drawn and quartered on the floor of the Senate and the House of Representatives by the Repiglican Party. But since it's a Repiglican, well, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R, it's okay if you're a Republican. Right? Yeah, that's what I thought. So just a few things to get us started. We are far from done. We'll take a little break and come back. You know the number here, right? 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. If you want to save us the toll-free charges, you are more than welcome to do so. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. Just one last piece of email. I got a little got an email from Mark in Japan, an expatriate. Mark's a little put out with me. He says, "Dear Bob, I listen every day, but that may come to an end. You condemn Obama's speech and proposal before even hearing it for yourself. Shame on you. The man is doing the best he can with a Congress that will allow nothing, ever. The point you should be hammering home is that until we control all of Congress, as well as the presidency, the 60% Congress will allow nothing, ever, that will benefit the middle class. Because of the filibuster abuse, what better to get the point across? You really ought to be espousing a massive voter registration in spite of and because of their efforts to limit voting by those who need the vote most, because of the filibuster. President not sure? Yeah, that's great. Let's do all we can to ensure the downfall of America. Burn, baby, burn approach? Sad, Bob, sad. I'm listening to both sides and they're winning. Despite the hilarity and insanity of their candidates, they're winning. How fucking insane is that? Gee, Bob, no wonder you're struggling to fund your sometimes on-the-air show. I appreciate your need to speak your mind, but think about who is listening. It's the filibuster, stupid. Like it or not, I'm a member of your Horn family because I listen every day. All the best, Mark." Well, the fact of the matter is, we call him President Not Sure because in the film Idiocracy, character who becomes President Not Sure is actually the smartest man in America. Just say it. And I'm sorry about my sometimes on the air show. I'll try to be less sick. See if I can get my daughter to have less surgery. Okay? Good. Maybe I'll stay back here and stay on the air instead of going out and walking the walk, and I'll just sit here and talk the talk. I didn't condemn Obama's speech before I heard it. I said precisely it would be a great speech. It was a great speech. He gives a great speech. But does anybody think the thing... And now, I mean, he's out there. He's being a little forceful. He's saying, pass the bill the way it is. Leave it alone. Pass it. Complete with cuts to Medicare and Medicaid. Pass it. Being real forceful about it. And the Repiglicans are being a little less hateful than they usually are, which is interesting. But, yeah, you're right. We do struggle to fund this program. Because we don't do things like sell hamburgers on the bones of the dead. Or try to exploit the listenership. Because, you know, it's like that thing on Sunday, the memorial service. It could have been bear hunting with one thumb McShotgun. And they still would have run the McDonald's ads and the Quaker Road ads. That's the point. There is not a single commercial enterprise out there that is delivering programming where the programming is the most important thing. All commercial broadcasting is designed to bring you to a potential seller, not bring programming to a potential viewer or listener. Except operations like this. It really is about the programming. And when you choose to support it, and a couple of you have this evening, it's the first that we have seen in a very, very long time since, we had one contribution Friday night, and except for that, nothing else until going back to like last Tuesday. So thank you. Thank you very much. It all pays bills. It all does. So anyway, it's time for the Green News Report. We'll take a break and come back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, September 13th, 2011.
Pakistan floods and pipelines explode again. Arctic sea ice hits record low again. Ground turkey from Cargill contaminated with salmonella again. Plus,
why is the EPA in a rush to push regulations that would saddle Americans with higher energy costs and throw even more of us out of work?
Republicans and their fossil fuel friends open a full court press against the EPA. Again and again and again.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We've got to remove some of those barriers out of the way that are being created by the federal government. I would start with an EPA that's gone wild. That's where we start.
Ooh, EPA gone wild. That sounds hot, Herman Cain. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, while they've been warming up towards this for a while, it seems like this week the full-out attack on the EPA began, and it was launched yesterday morning with this story at Tucker Carlson's fake news site, The Daily Caller, an article by a guy named Matthew Boyle, who said that a Texas energy plant was shutting down plants and coal mines would lose 500 jobs thanks to horrible EPA regulations. Of course, once we looked into the story, we found there was much more to it that poor Matthew Boyle told me, and you can read it at bradblog.com. He just couldn't find. He couldn't find the other side of the story.
Yeah, the head of the Environmental Integrity Project, who says that in reality, this Dallas-based coal-fired power plant company, Luminant, is actually opportunistically using the EPA to cover up their own bad investment decisions. Like back in 2007, they bet billions on coal just as natural gas prices were plummeting, and now their coal plants are worth only a fraction of what they paid.
So they're using the EPA as a scapegoat for their own business failures. Who'd have thunk it?
Yep. More on the full court press against the EPA in a moment. But first, some green headlines. Factory farming giant Cargill has announced yet another recall of ground turkey due to salmonella contamination from the same processing plant in Arkansas that was the source of a massive, record-breaking recall of ground turkey just a month ago that killed one person and sickened over 100.
It's nice that Cargill is one of the major suppliers to the school lunch program, too, isn't it?
Yes, they are.
Delicious.
61 people were killed in a pipeline explosion in Kenya on Monday. Residents in an impoverished community had rushed to collect hundreds of gallons of gasoline spilling from a leak in a pipeline when an ember from a nearby fire ignited the spill, creating a fireball that engulfed the entire neighborhood. Hundreds were injured. 141 people have been killed in Pakistan after unusually heavy seasonal monsoon rains have led again to deadly flooding this year. The country is still reeling from the biblical floods last year that covered a fifth of the country and displaced 20 million people. The Pakistan government has requested emergency international aid to assist more than 4 million now displaced by the latest floods. Here in the U.S., the summer wasn't just hot, it was record hot. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says that the span of June, July, and August 2011 was the second hottest summer on record for the entire U.S., just a smidgen below the all-time record set in 1936 during the Dust Bowl. Arctic sea ice is again melting to record lows in the summer. Preliminary measurements indicate that the extent of sea ice in the Arctic has reached new record lows in 2011, breaking the previous record set in 2007 and continuing the long-term decline as predicted by climate scientists.
Predicted but completely ignored by climate science deniers who say, you know, this whole thing is just a hoax, Des.
But climate science was completely missing from the CNN Tea Party debate on Monday night. The debate, which was an unprecedented partnership between CNN and the Tea Party Express, a political action committee, the energy policies from the Republican presidential contenders were essentially the same as they pretty much always are: drill everywhere and burn everything. But they all joined hands to bash the EPA. Here's Herman Cain.
I would put together a regulatory reduction commission. The people that I would appoint to that commission will be people who have been abused by the EPA.
Now, by abused by the EPA, does he mean people who have clean air, clean water now, thanks to the EPA?
No, I think he's talking about the fossil fuel industry, who really got their money's worth from the advertising during the Tea Party debate. Commercial breaks filled with shiny image ads for the fossil fuel industry and an aggressive new ad campaign against the EPA from the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity.
The EPA needs to slow down. Tell Congress to make sure they do.
Of course, it's a lie that Americans must choose between jobs and their health. And of course, there is no such thing as clean coal. But with the Supreme Court's Citizens United ruling unleashing corporate spending on politics, we can expect a tsunami of these third-party ads attacking the EPA, environmental, and public health regulations for the next 15 months.
It also begs the question as to how aggressive CNN, MSNBC, and, well, Fox News can be in their reporting on these issues, given that they are making millions from the fossil fuel companies to run these propaganda ads. For more on all of these stories and the ones we had no time for today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please do consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report, at least until the fossil fuel companies decide they want to spend millions advertising with us. We're not holding our breaths. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Ten past the hour, and well, enough chilly-shallying about I filibustered for far too long, but I kind of had to get that off my chest. To the phones we go, I hope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Man, people are a heck of touchy. What's up with the, attacks on the show every other day?
Phase of the moon, I guess.
Well, I mean, it's funny that you...
Sandra, I think I'm pretty mild where President Obama is concerned. I mean, I get these emails calling him a fascist war criminal, yada, yada, yada. You know, of course, they come from a guy who's never listened to the show, but, you know, why should listening to the show matter?
Well, no, but I guess, you know, people are so, it's just sort of hard to be really critical when in the face of what we saw the other night. So I can sort of appreciate that, but, you know, you can't be hoodwinked about what's going on, though, with Obama, you know? I mean, I'm not going to say he's as bad as those people on the stage the other night, no. But, you know, there's some issues.
He ain't FDR.
Well, there's some issues because it's like, oh, wait. Now all of a sudden he's going from coast to coast around the world, you know, being aggressive. I think he actually almost said Republican today, you know. And I'm sorry to be cynical, but it's just like, you know, you could have done this for every issue that was a problem, Mr. Obama. What's up? So it's hard for me to get too... I can't believe it no more.
You just said something that's really, really important, Sandra. He could have gotten this way with any issue he wanted to.
But that's what I'm saying. That's why it's just kind of like... So it's hard for me to, you know, drum up a whole bunch of rah-rah with it now. We've been in this administration for a number of years now, and the situation in this country has been dire since Obama came in, not because of him, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it did chat my ass last night to hear him... I forget which one. You know, Newt's good for a cutie like that. Maybe he's the one who said the Obama depression.
Well, no, I mean, that's just a joke. I mean, you know, we know what he came in with, and that's a given. And there's no way that this man could take care of everything that went on for the last 30 years that came to a head. I mean, no one, at least not me, and I don't hear too many other people on the horn talking like that, but... you know, things are too serious for us to sort of kowtow behind some Democratic leader now. You know what I mean? It's beyond that. It's like, oh, no. When I saw them people, that crowd, and the sort of corporate support from the media to every corporation that these teabagging people get, I just still have flashes of Weimar Germany, because... Not a comment, not a blink when people are cheering for someone to die if they don't happen to have, you know, made the right choice about insurance. And, you know, that whole mentality, that, you know, Ron Paul, I mean, that's him. He revealed himself for real there. And
yeah, there wasn't anything new in that. Did you catch the end of it, the little last remark question, Sandra, where they said, here's your chance to show your personality. What would you bring to the White House? What would you change about the White House? There was Ron Paul.
I'd bring a bushel basket of common sense and a course in Austrian economics.
Yeah, no, and it's just like, dude, you know, I mean, and the thing about him, people, you know, but it's like his whole foreign policy trip is out of a page from, Charles Lindbergh. He's an isolationist. Don't get it, you know, get it straight, people. His isolationist isn't what the U.S. is about either. So, he's dubious as hell.
That's why I've always said that, like, on things like Iraq and Afghanistan, that he was right for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. No, he's just a throwback from the sort of isolationist, and I always think of Charles Lindbergh. You know, he was a fascist. Oh my God! Out and out fascist.
From Germany talking about his lovely luncheon with Mr. Hitler.
Right. I mean, he was all wrong, but he represents a tradition of Republican isolationism that, you know, was countered by Woodrow Wilson and the other internationalists. Kind of like what Obama. I don't like to throw Obama into Wilson because Wilson was such a horrific racist. I can't really think of another person, but you know what I mean. Wilsonian type of foreign policy versus this isolationist shit that these people are associating with Ron Paul. But his real doctrine is what we heard about, you know, freedom and choices. And it just goes on and on because Mr. Paul, if he has to choose between eating and buying this policy you're talking about, then what? That's the problem with the libertarians. Then what?
And see, I mean, and just to take it a step further, Sandra, you know, Friday evening, I had that story about the not the hypothetical guy, but the real guy, the real 26-year-old guy in South Carolina who has breast cancer.
Right.
Now, he's not hypothetical. He's got a job. He goes to work every day. He makes $9 an hour. He gets 30 hours a week. What do you say to that guy? Because the reality is he was too rich. I mean, let's put it that way. He was too rich, Sandra, to be able to get on Medicaid in South Carolina.
Well, No, but the thing about it is, you know, I guess people don't really listen to what these libertarians, because their whole ideology is just a bunch of bullshit, because it don't make no sense what Ron Paul is implying. He's trying to say, basically, and if you keep going down the line with him, if you get sick, somehow that's a choice? Hello. They can reduce everything to a choice, which means that vast swaths of people will just die off like they do in many places around the world right now. Somalia comes to mind.
Well, you know, you're the one who referenced the Malthusian streak the other night.
Well, you know, that's what... That's
and, you know, Ron, libertarianism kind of has one.
Right, but to listen to them, because they stammer around, because I have to give it, you know, Wolf Blitzer ain't my favorite, but I was like, damn, he came out with at least a good-ass question there. He didn't take it to as far as I would, but he did ask. But what the thing that was really disturbing, though, is those people in the crowd. They're like, oh, I'm going to have to, because I listened to a follow-up, oh, I'm going to have to check more into Ron Paul, and, you know, all upset. And it's like, wait a minute, bitch. You cheering for people to die, but you upset about the Taliban taking out motherfuckers because they invaded the country? You know, get a clue. I mean, you can't have it both ways. If you went to dog-eat, if your ass was being invaded, you would whip out whatever gun or three or four you got. So now you can't make the connection that Ron Paul just told your ass? Listen, it's scary what's going on. These people are so... Now, I don't want to say they're stupid, but they have no interest in reviewing the facts. And let me just add, did Michelle Bachmann must have got her hair did because she got something for Rick Perry. You know, that's not my favorite girl, but I was like, oh, snap, if she didn't call him on the corporation, too. I said that hair was looking mighty fine.
Yeah, and I bet she shaved above the knee, too.
You know, I know she's crazy, but I was, me and my friend were sitting in the car listening to NPR, and they played that clip. I said, oh, shit, I wish I saw her hair, because that shit was, she was on it.
Oh, no, she had a whole new...
him.
Oh, no, Sandra, she had a whole new do.
Oh!
I thought you'd already seen the video. Damn.
No, I only listened to some of it. No, I was... No, I... First I'm hearing, whoa.
It was, they took that straightening iron to it, and it was all planed out in one direction, and planed down in another direction. I mean, it was real Jetson.
Oh, shit, I was right. She did get her hair did. Okay.
Oh, Jesus.
No, they're crazy, you know, anyway, yeah, but she... You're right about the other bit of that, though. I hope the NARAL is cutting up editing right now, because she's talking about choices and females.
She wasn't a little bit, Sandra. She was. She had that head going, and I swear I think she put one wrist on her waist, and I am offended for the little girls that didn't have a choice.
Maybe she came out of a screening of the Help too. So, you know, we might have to, I don't know. I was taken off, seriously though, I really was sort of laughing. I saw, Rick Perry, it's like, keep your ass in Texas.
Well, did you hear the quote of the day on Rick Perry?
Oh no, what?
This came from write this down. This came from a Republican strategist, okay?
Yeah, right, okay.
He tweeted last night, watching Rick Perry try to string together two sentences about policy is like watching a chimp play with a locked suitcase.
Another thing, he's an idiot because he said, I'm offended if you think I'm a hoe for $5,000. But $30 million is okay.
Right, exactly. That was where I was. No. He's a lot more expensive than that machine.
I was laughing though. I said, "Damn, at least you up front." So his handlers need to reel him in. He need to go to a few little classes because as soon as they got up his ass, he kind of fell apart. Because how are we gonna go up there and admit, okay, well, no, I wouldn't do nothing for $5,000. I raised $30 million. So the connection one can make in the audience or in the TV land is that, oh, okay, but you'll do whatever you need to do for $30 million.
Right? Right. It's like that old punchline. It's like that old joke whose punchline is, no, we already know what you are. We're only negotiating the price.
That's what he thought about himself, though. That's why it was so damn funny. I'm like, man, these people, these corporate backers, they better try to inject some IQ in these folks because they sound a hella stupid.
Well, and speaking of corporate backers, and Brad Friedman and Desi mentioned it in the Green News Report, of course, this thing was sponsored in big part by the coal industry.
Oh, God. Well, the coal industry and CNN, they are locked up, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Jesus.
I mean, that's why their Battle for Blair Mountain piece turned out to be a story about the poor, beaten down, bedraggled mountaintop removers family that's being assaulted by all those mean, nonviolent hippies.
And, you know, I was shaking my head because, you know, I was one of them people. I just couldn't watch the ceremony. But I am in shock about the commercials. It's like these people could have just let that go commercial free. They got enough money for it. That is despicable. And like he said, the names are still rolling when McDonald's was on. What about them people?
Right.
I mean, it is so ugly and horrible, you can barely comment on it. It is so outrageous. It's scandalous.
Well, what kind of blew me away, Sandra, was the little bit of pushback that I got from people saying, well, you know, this is America, and that's how they pay for broadcasting.
Wait, that's the pushback you got? You mean you had people actually pushing back on that?
Yes.
There is no explanation from anybody who's not an executive for those corporations. Everybody else should be equally outraged. Who's going to push? What toady is pushing back? Somebody on Facebook?
Oh, yeah.
God, I mean...
I think we're friends on Facebook. Go look. It's there. It's not too far down.
You know, I don't really...
I'm public. I mean, anybody can see my page, so...
No, that's fine. I'll have a look. But what I'm... I guess it's just kind of, I guess people, you have to understand that the public airways are that public, and before we were completely corporatized, there was an obligation because they got the right to print money, which is what a broadcast license is, right?
Absolutely.
They would have to come back and give something back. Now, if reading of names from the day that everything changed isn't warrant enough for them to run some free shit? Wow. I don't know what is. I guess it's been 10 years.
That's the thing that sent me running around the damn room, Sandra.
I guess time's up. Maybe
the first half of the rugby match was delivered by NBC without commercials.
Well,
the rerun of the rugby match.
No way. You're kidding. By the way, go All Blacks. Sorry, I spent some time down there and the All Blacks, and they all look good too. Sorry to digress, but yeah, the World Cup, that's on it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, fantastic. And the All Blacks, I don't know, they pounded Tonga. It's like 41 to.
Oh, it was a beating.
Something like a beatdown. I'm like, good Jesus. Anyway, I'm sorry. I don't mean to digress, but yeah, the World Cup. That's great.
Oh, and the Irish beat us like borrowed mules, and the Irish fans were all pissed off because they didn't beat us more.
No, they got hella criticized. I was reading some articles in the Guardian. They were like, oh, you know what? The U.S. They were going on about the U.S. had a wonderful showing. You know, considering the trauma of what? You know, I'm not buying it anymore with the 9/11 because. If I did not hear people say, oh, how come they don't have any sales today? I'm not lying. So, you understand?
Say what?
Yes. So, no.
And I mean, Jesus, the NFL, boy, did I love watching. I'm sorry. There are a few things in life that are more satisfying. I mean, there are more things, but just in terms of passivity, there are few things in life, Sandra, that are more satisfying than watching the Dallas Cowboys come undone.
Now listen, if I see Tony Romo coming out apologizing for his team one more time, he need to be roped. You an idiot. Anyway, I couldn't have been more happier, though.
I mean, did that center just center the ball like ding right into his chest?
What the?
While he was off looking around or something? Got him.
Yeah, no, but you see, you think about it, though, it's just because it's Dallas and, you know, that.
No, Jerry Jones is going to put out a hit on Tony Romo if he's not careful.
Oh, no.
Jerry Jones, that kind of man.
Yeah, over the top with his huge billion-dollar, you know, stadium, and he still can't win. So, no, that was enjoyable. Right up there with, I know I might offend, but Indianapolis, that shit was funny, too. It's like, Peyton, where are you?
Yeah, Peyton may not be coming back.
And, you know, what can I say? I was laughing. I thought, oh, well, maybe you'll win one, fool.
34-7.
That was a shame. And the Giants, oh, well, good start.
I was actually happy for the Jets. I'm generally not a Jets fan, but that just, I mean, because beforehand they had what's his name, the defensive just world beater for the Cowboys, Ware. They had him. Well, I consider it a high honor to be for Dallas to be representing today in this game here in New York. And I mean, they had video footage of him running around with an American flag and.
Oh, no, listen.
Stop, you know.
That was great, but another one in this, and if we're on the football, and then we can stop, but another thing had me laughing, too, because I'm that kind of sick person, was the Cam Newton. It's like, oopsie, wow, what you got to say now about him? And, you know, get paid, get your money, put it in the bank, fuck you. I was like, damn, work it. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it came up on the short end.
And I'm like, you know, the way they ran that kid down because he wanted to get some money, screw you, you know. So it was good to see.
Yeah, it came up short, but not for want of trying on his end. And on the other hand, I am informed that the Denver fans in the middle of a beatdown when were chanting Tebow, Tebow, Tebow.
Listen, that's the I can't even deal with the Denver thing. That's hilarious. Yeah, no. And then the football was. I have to say that was all. It was so many hilarious narratives because the Ricky Williams, of course, that freak is in Baltimore, and it's beautiful because he said, "I never had as much pleasure and enjoyment in beating the Steelers. I was rolling because you know Ricky Williams, he's crazy, right?"
Oh, yeah.
Straight up high, some Zen BS, but what, that comment was funny as hell. God damn. But anyway.
And, well, then the Steelers, I mean, just.
Yeah, Ron, are you beat
not
the,
ready
beat
for
the
prime
rapist.
Time.
Beat the rapist, and, you know, what can I say?
Well, it was a great day of football, Sandra. It really was. I mean, it was one of the better opening days I remember.
Well, and of course, you probably have like three people listening to the show now.
No, I don't think it's quite that bad, but no, there's an interplay here, Sandra, and you recognize it, and I recognize it too. Where else, with the exception of that rugby game, would we have to stop? I mean, is there any other country that mixes its national politics and its war making and all of that stuff inside its sport like the United States does?
Oh, no. I mean, but it's, you know, it's kind of typical of Empire, though. You know what I mean? It fits the sort of Roman model quite well, actually. So it's not surprising, but it is so tedious, though. But I can't believe that they showed the rugby without a break. I'm still stuck on that. And they had to advertise for this 9/11 business.
Well, and remember, you know, no kidding, the Masters will come on this spring, and it will be offered with, you know, a couple of commercials every 45 minutes. For, you know, the Masters that won't let women, you know, into the clubhouse.
Well, that's right. It's always brought on by CBS, isn't it?
Yeah, limited commercial interruption by Travelers. You know, and Travelers was advertising yesterday without limiting their interruptions. You know, that little red umbrella and that sad-ass dog.
Yeah, no. I didn't watch it, so I'm just shocked. I'm like, wow, you know, that's terrible. And you haven't seen any sort of media critique on that at all? Are you only one?
No, I'm the only one.
Well, that's amazing because that's so sick.
Yeah, and I don't think I'm just not tapped in. I think it's just so automatic that we expect everything to be commercialized, everything to be monetized. Of course we're going to sell hamburgers with dead people in them.
Well, you know, when I was listening to some of that Republican debate stuff in the crowd, you know, because I screw the participants, but the crowd, I'm just thinking, damn, I wonder how they would, some of the people would do in a Russo's stag hunt. You know what that is? You know about that?
Yeah, yeah.
Because that just popped in my mind. I'm thinking about, they have no idea about cooperation, so it would be rabbit stew all around.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and I got to share this with you. This just rolled in from David in Tennessee. With regard to Tony Romo.
Yeah.
David says, tell Sandra, on the Dan Patrick radio show, they have a game show within the show. It's called Romo, Then or Now. Dan's staff plays a clip of Romo saying he's frustrated and so forth. Dan then has to identify now or then. He got 3 of the 5 going back to 2008, and they had music in the background to boot. David said it's an absolute hoot to hear.
No, I listen to the Dan Patrick show sometimes, too, because the show is so smug, but it has some funny bits.
Yeah, but it's pretty smart, too. I mean,
I know, it's very smart, but I like more Dan, less Danette. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Those dudes are like...
Oh, and you know, I got to tell you this, because this is my little name-dropping moment. You know Football Night in America on NBC on Sunday nights?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know the guy who knows all the stats and numbers and everything at the end of the show? His name is Mike Florio.
Okay.
He's, you know, real polished looking, great hair, you know, kind of bookends with Dan Patrick over there.
Yeah, the hair. Everyone has great hair.
Oh,
right?
Awesome hair.
Like a running joke with Dan Patrick, yeah.
Yeah, Mike Florio is a classmate of mine.
All right.
Yeah, while I was having my cup of coffee in law school, he was busy becoming first in our class.
Oh, okay.
And just to tell you just to give you a sense of what lawyering's like out there, he comes out of law school, gets one of these, jobs where you work from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturday, Monday through Saturday, carrying some guy's briefcase at a defense firm.
Right.
But he is an absolute NFL freak. And, I mean, just uses that lawyerly, analytical mind, just absorbing stats, absorbing figures, absorbing... And sets up this website a million years ago, and the guy was consistently more right than anybody else on the planet. And he's parlayed that into a gig on NBC.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I kind of dig that. It's like, hey, I know him.
That's, well, listen, whatever you have to do, that's funny.
Yeah.
Well, what happened to, because he doesn't work for MSNBC anymore, because Keith Olbermann was on that for a minute.
Yeah, and a half. doesn't Keith still show up on Patrick's radio show periodically?
Well, yeah, but I haven't really. Since he left the other ship, as he described. That show has its really funny moments, I have to say. But anyway, I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm still thinking about.
You got to go back and check Michelle's hair. You laid me low with the beginning of the call, just because I thought you really knew. I mean,
no,
she had her. I mean, and because I was watching the Twitter feed during it all, and it was all about, wow, what happened to Michelle's hair?
Oh no! Listen, that's just a running gag in our house about people getting their hair and nails and stuff did.
Oh, but she did. And one more giggle before you have to go.
Okay.
I saw the ultimate Marcus Bachman line last night, and I wish I saw who had said it on Twitter so I could give them credit. I was ruined for about 20 minutes.
Okay.
If Marcus Bachman was any deeper in the closet, he'd be riding a lion through Narnia.
You know,
just beautiful.
That's great. No way. You know, because I shared a couple of YouTube videos of him, you know, with a couple of family friends, if you know what I mean by family, and they were like, oh, snap. They couldn't believe it. these are like, you know, guys who are just, you know, they're not, but they were just like, wow. So, I mean, dude is so suspect.
Yeah, I saw another remark of today, a picture of Michelle, but it was like a baseball trading card.
Yeah.
You know, with the stats and the facts and the figures, it said, Michelle Bachmann, R, Minnesota, has never seen her husband naked.
Shut up. Listen, the other comment that was killing me from that that debate was, you know, that back to what they would take to Washington, you know, Rick Perry had to bring up his beautiful wife. It's like, yeah, you know you got to talk about your bit because everyone thinks...
That you ain't batting for the team.
You're going to be bringing some Crisco and whatnot to the White House.
You know, no, he... Exactly. There was the same thing I thought. Dude, we know you're married. But, no, that whole exchange was just so very, very weird.
Oh, no. It's for him to talk about that's like, that's what you're going to bring to, you know, who cares? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because we were all figuring he was going to ditch her and leave her in Austin and just, you know, hang the mirror ball in the Oval Office.
No, but that's because of that closet door. You know, that's his whole... story. Anyway, yeah, that was really gruesome. Okay, well, listen, I guess that's it.
All right, Sandra, have a wonderful evening, dear.
All right, bye.
Later. Sandra calling from California. Your moment, your NFL moment for the evening as well. Hey, welcome to the program.
God, I don't call in for weeks, and then I have to follow Sandra.
Yeah, but if there's anybody who can, Reverbo, it's you.
Oh, yeah, I just have to push on and do the best I can. Cheating, because in my opinion, your most revered and highly rated mind of all your calls.
Now you're going to make people jealous.
All right, well, I'm setting up a challenge here. Okay, let's see what y'all got.
Yeah, what is it Jim Rome says? Have a take and don't suck.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
God.
Is he still on the air?
Oh, yeah.
Is the same old stick?
Why, if it's still getting you paid $1 million, don't fix it.
I guess not. I can tell you, the numbers came out today, Bob, and I can, well, while I can't tell you how many people, are sick today, I can tell you how many people, if they were feeling sick, would be charging, their visit to the doctor to, the for-profit, insurance companies who will gladly pass those costs on to you, and that would be 50 million Americans.
You know, that's in extent, there's 300 million Americans, 50, God, that's a lot of people.
Yeah, you know, and it's, and between 1 and 6 and 1 and 7 of our neighbors are today unemployed, 46.
You know, those aren't the numbers that a healthy nation puts up, Reverbo.
Coincidentally, about 1 in 6 of us now live in poverty.
Yeah, I saw that those went up too.
I guess we're really bringing up the rear these days. Everybody should be mighty proud. They should be just really proud.
Yeah, is this the part where I cue up Lee Greenwood?
Oh, man, I don't
And I'm
know.
Proud to live in America where at least I know I'm broke.
You know how anybody can, you know, you just hate to go over the same old ground, don't you? But I'm telling you, how can anyone, you know, in the face of years and years of evidence, you know, continue to just fall for this madness?
Well, did you happen, I mean, and I don't fault you if you didn't. Did you happen to tune in and see that crowd last night in there?
I couldn't do it. I was going to get to that. There was no way I could watch that. I couldn't do that to myself. I knew I couldn't do it, and I didn't even try to do it. Mark, you know, we're just all trying to get along here. Just calm down. But he, you know, giving you crap about reaching your conclusions about Obama's speech before he gave it. Hey, this wasn't hard to do at all. These people are like mind stuck beyond Ayn Rand's wildest dreams. I couldn't do it.
Well, you know, they do put out transcripts before it goes down, but, you know, just saying.
Oh, you know, Paul, he really is a character, that Ron Paul. And it's funny because do you remember, And I was living in Colorado at the time when this all went down. But a little, right after 9/11, there was a University of Colorado professor, kind of a whack job, and his name was...
Ward Churchill.
And Ward Churchill, yes, he wrote like a little paper. Basically, it was the blowback theory. Remember?
Yes.
Just exactly what our friend Mr. Paul was talking about, evidently, the other night. And somehow, you know, it's valid. Well, the fact is that it's always been valid. I mean, if you don't watch where you step, you're going to step on it. You might step on a big snake. And, boy, you wouldn't have believed the brouhaha that caused.
Didn't they threaten his life and so forth?
Well, they wanted to fire him, but they couldn't fire him on First Amendment grounds. But they ended up, like I say, he was kind of a whack job, as some of these people are wont to be anyway. And I think he claimed he was an Indian or something, and they eventually tried to fired him for plagiarism or something. But he, I think he appealed the whole thing, and the court awarded him $1, which it, irrelevant. They found
no, but yeah, it was about being vindicated.
Right, this mass hysteria. But interesting, isn't it? How that theory really always has been has some validity to it.
Well, I mean, I've never understood how it didn't, Reverbo. When you drop bombs on people. When, as Jeanette noted on my Facebook page, when you pick up people in the dark and still of the night from other nations and render them, you know, Jesus, that's what we do to pork fat to make lard. We render them. And you kill their civilians. I mean, you know, did you see where George Bush took credit for the killing of Osama bin Laden a couple of days ago?
Don't do this to me. No.
Well, he did.
Gotta give him one for that.
Brass, if nothing. Is that bell brass? Because it needs to be brass for that.
Oh, my. George Bush.
But, you know, I saw another comment that says, I wonder what it's like on 9/11... in Iraq when they start counting the million dead people who were innocent of everything and were killed just the same. We lost 3,000 people on September 11th, 2001. A number of other people were sickened and maimed. But we used that as an excuse to kill a million innocent people. And I didn't hear those million innocents mentioned, no, not once on Sunday.
You probably won't ever hear them. You'll have to see.
No, because they don't exist.
No. Collateral damage, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can't really drop bombs on Saudi Arabia now, can you?
I guess not, although, oddly enough, the Spanish have decided that they're not afraid. Guess what a Spanish court's done, Reverbo?
What have they done?
They have resurrected or revived or whatever they do with charges over there, rape charges against the guy who is the number one minority shareholder in Fox News. And the single largest shareholder in Citigroup, Prince Al-Walal bin Tazarid, you know, that guy. 24th richest man in the world. Allegations that in 2008 he invited a young woman aboard his giga yacht. No, really, that's the word for it.
Yeah.
Drugged her and had his way with her. They're not afraid. The Spanish don't, you know.
Well, didn't the Spanish bring, or attempted to bring charges of war crimes against Cheney and Bush?
I can't remember. Was that the Spanish or was that the Italians? No, the Italians wanted the CIA agents.
Yeah, the Spanish did, and then there actually was some pressure put on them to just go ahead and why don't you forget that? Yeah, interesting. And then when you consider that the Spanish had had a horrific terror attack in their subway system themselves, they lost it.
Right, and they what did they do, Reverbo? They proceeded to have an orderly, sane, methodical law enforcement investigation, and lo and behold, they caught the little bastards.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile,
they didn't really have to mobilize their Marines to do it.
No, nobody running onto beaches yelling for Christ and St. James or anything.
No. Well, they sure got theirs, didn't they? 5 years ago, the Spanish were just doing fine, thank you. They weren't in the red at all, and now they, thanks to some bizarre intervention and strange investments unusual private investment decisions, now they're going down the drain. Funny that. They were doing just fine.
But now, well, blowback. But the fact that we live in a nation with monsters like in these last two pageant audiences who cheer miserable death and outright murder. Reverbo, it's kind of hard not to look up and go, you know, because there's not enough of them, as I've said before, there's not enough of them, Reverbo, to actually win an election. But there's certainly enough of them to ruin one.
Well, there's enough of them if we just decide to stay home. There's enough of them. There's enough of them if we just hand it to them. But, you know, Sanders is right. This is really the crux of all this. See if this makes any sense to you. If you turn all of us into peons, how exactly are we going to pay our own way?
And I can't make that mathematical computation. It keeps coming up nulls.
I mean, you want to turn everybody into like this part-time minimum wage Walmart world, and yet I have to, you know, shell out hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars a month for health care and my own retirement. I mean, so you're going to penalize me. Shit, I'm living in my mom's basement in your world until I'm 43. I can't even afford to go to college. Exactly how am I going to pay for all this shit? They really haven't thought this through, Bob.
I go back and forth. I vacillate on that. On the one hand, they really haven't thought this through. On the other hand, I think they have. I think they have, Reverbo. And you know, they're at this point in time, they are so obsessed with getting the last few crumbs that we have that that's all that matters. And if the rest of us go to hell, that's fine. And the rank and file teabaggers will be presented with a Laurel and Hardy handshake and an American flag on a cheap little stick that was made in China, and they can wave it all the way to their graves. But there are things. I mean, there are no Ron Paul. You know, I'm going to bring a basket of good old fashioned American Texas common sense and a course on Austrian economics. And I think it was along about that time that Agnes walked in back here and saw that I was watching it and went, "Oh, Bob, honestly."
I know we have to keep track of them, but I'll have to get back into it some other time. It would have just been too painful. I couldn't. You just get stupider listening and watching these people. You know, the weird thing is, though, that they're pushing just regular people. I can't tell you anything about the D-baggers. They're gone. But they're pushing me into a corner. I mean, it's getting so polarized. I mean, you know, I'm pretty much was you know, I kind of wanted to be a capitalist when I grew up. I kind of wanted to, you know, do what I can, do what I could to make a little money and, you know, and enjoy some of the finer things in life. And
home in the country, river of beer over your grandmother's paisley shawl? Yeah, oh, I know.
No, I kind of made a good run at it, and I did okay before everything just completely unraveled. I didn't do too bad. But
and, of course, Ron Paul would say, well, that's freedom. That's liberty. You take your risks.
You just take your risks. But, I mean,
you pays your money, you takes your chances, and if there's a break on the roulette wheel, well, you didn't know about it. Now, did you?
I guess I should have thought of that before, you know, before, like, I was born and stuff. But I might say, you know, in theory, I might have had a preference for, say, you know, I saw what unchecked corporatism can do, and I might have had a preference for, say, the social democracy models of Europe. I might have liked that sort of compassionate social model, you know, a little better. That didn't seem to, nobody's trying to tunnel their way out of any hell holes over there, I don't see. And nobody's, you know, going broke just because they get sick or have an accident. But the point is, it's sort of pushing everybody into a corner now. You're making this impossible. I mean, it's either the social model or the individual model, and you've got a gun to my head, and you're making me choose. And the thing is,
if you choose the social model, they'll go ahead and pull the trigger of the gun.
And if I choose the individual model, I can't afford it. So I might as well put the gun to my own head. Wow. I got it worked out.
That's some catch, that catch-22.
It really is. And then when you start, you can bring this, it might take more of a scholarly mind than mine in the history department, but aren't you now kind of returning to a sort of a structure that essentially created the conditions for things like, I don't know, the Russian Revolution?
Well, there's a reason that Sandra keeps referencing the really disturbing resemblance to the Weimar Republic. Because that came before the little guy with the chaplain mustache. And then the fun really started. Now, but see, the thing is, whatever happens to America will be uniquely American, and I'm not being a smartass in saying it. We're not going to do it like that. We'll do it worse. We'll do it, but we'll do it more patriotically while we're doing it worse.
Well, we'll do it exceptionally.
Americanly exceptionally.
That's right. But, I mean, are they thinking this time, man, they're really going to get it right? They'll just have us so impoverished, so, shall we say, well-chumped, that they'll be, that this time, their model, sorry, this time their model will last for a million years. We'll be just so, all we'll be doing is just eating Slim Jims in our mom's basement, watching football, and that'll just be the end of that. And we'll
drinking that free bubble up and eating that rainbow pie.
That's right, drinking the upper cam. You know what's fun to do? You can go on the internet and you can go look up sites where they talk about old soft drinks that you remember when you had when you were a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them are real regionally based. Some of them, like, just in Maryland, I can remember having one called Almond Smash, which I found about a year ago, and it was basically undrinkable. But I guess we loved that when we were like 15. But I'm sure you could find some stuff. You grew up down Alabama way, didn't you?
Oh yeah. I had my RC Cola and my Moon Pie.
Oh man.
Played Maypole on the hill.
16 ounce RC and a half a rack of ribs. That's a feat.
That's good living. Yeah. No, I remember Upper Ten. I remember Kick. I remember Sunrise Orange and Sunrise Grape. Now, you know, you got to go way hard up east to get into stuff like Moxie.
I got a bottle of unopened Moxie.
I've never tasted the stuff. Maybe next year, Netroots Nation, when we go up to Providence, if we go up to Providence, maybe I'll get to try some Moxie then. I don't know. But, you mentioned, you know, where these people, oh, they're going to get it right this time. Look, it's not like this is not without warning, Reverbo. It was only a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, when the Northeast was being absolutely and continues to be devastated by Hurricane Irene, that Ron Paul declared that America would be better if we could go back to the America of 1900, the year that the Galveston hurricane killed upwards of 6,000 people.
And I guess the church just wasn't around to help those people? Was that what was?
Well, you know, the church would have, but they were gone too.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Sandra just added to the discussion, Dr. Pepper with peanuts.
Appetizer.
Yeah. Yeah, and that has to be the Virginia peanuts. That, no red skins on that. Now, those are your skinned peanuts.
Okay.
Because the skins are kind of bitter.
And now, well, you're not talking about a can of beer nuts, are you?
No. These are the salty, no skins, cocktail peanuts, I think Planters calls them.
Oh, yeah, just a little greasy, just for that. Yes, I know. Those are delicious.
Yeah, in an ice cold bottle of Dr. Pepper, and you let them sit down there till the very end, and then you kind of got to work them out, and they're a little bit mushy. Oh, they're yummy.
You remember they used to, and they still may make this. It was sort of it was like chocolate. It was called Yoo-Hoo.
Oh, it's still out there. Ferg absolutely will crawl across ground glass to bow before the bumper of the truck that delivers that garbage.
God, I'm going to have to get a bottle of that and try it.
I think it's made with whey or something. You know, it's just one notch above being barely milk at all.
I'm hoping it gets a petroleum product. I mean, I think that's where they get the delicious
one. Well, that's like Velveeta. You know, anything that's supposedly cheese and can just sit out on your unrefrigerated shelf, that's got to be made from a petroleum byproduct. It just does.
I hope so. You know, it's sad that Bagent isn't around to see, you know, the spectacles like last.
No, but the book of essays that's coming out, I think it's going to be a little bit like our buddy, the late great prophet Bill Hicks. It's going to be relevant, even if it's a couple of years old.
Hey, he's relevant like the best science fiction's relevant.
Right. I mean, if it weren't for the fact that I have played it recently, I would have once again played Bill Hicks on marketing. In regard to the ads that were running during the 9/11 memorial.
Yeah, I mean, there are some people that really have nailed this. The United States has just been one bizarre, like, ongoing commercial, one crazy, like, PR-induced facade or legend. I mean, by the way, you can read all of Bagent's stuff. Essays on his website.
Yeah, joebagent.com.
And they are great. But, I mean, that's kind of...
What was it? A Million Little Feet? I still go back and read that every now and then. Where he talks about community and the fact that Americans are absolutely oblivious to the way that the rest of the world lives.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, we kind of exist in like this mass hallucination. I mean, the Kool-Aid.
Well, it is a mass hallucination, or I don't know, a mass nightmare. And I'm sorry, I'm not just trying to beat a dead horse here, Reverbo, but I'm really not okay after last night and the previous pageant. It's a mass nightmare when a room full of people will cheer wildly at the idea of a 30-year-old man having the freedom to die in misery. Because, let me extend from that a minute, Reverbo. It wasn't just those people in the room. Because we know that they represent a statistical sampling of the people of the United States. 18-20% maybe. The same crowd that loves Jesus so much.
And how many of these people are, like, independently wealthy enough to afford state-of-the-art medical care if they get sick tomorrow? I would say none of them. So it becomes even more I mean, I can't even get my mind around any of this anymore. They've just, it's just madness. And how much longer are these people going to be duped? Well, I guess we know the answer to that.
That would be chumped.
Chumped. Well.
Well, chumped.
Be chumped. Be chumped. Oh boy. Here's something good, and then I will. I'll end with this. On October 28th, Johnny Depp is going to reprise his role as the good doctor Hunter Thompson.
Really?
Heard about this? Yes, in a movie based on Thompson's novel called The Rum Diary.
Oh, that'll be fun.
I'm looking forward to that.
That was the thing that Thompson was working on before he became a real-life journalist.
Yeah, pretty much. I wasn't sure if it was real or not, and of course, what difference would it make? But then when I did a little research on it, I guess he really was. Get this, only he would do something like this. He really was, for a brief time, a sports writer in San Juan for some sort of sports paper.
Yep.
For about a year. I mean, what, only he could pull something like that off.
Well, he started out in Air Force Public Affairs.
Yeah. Anyway, this is sort of based on characters that he ran into down there, and anything Johnny Depp, I would say that I would hope that it would. I'm considering it highly recommended if Depp has anything to do with it.
Yeah, that's a watcher. That's a watcher. Oh, and by the way, David in Tennessee, with reference to that Galveston remark I made a minute ago.
Yeah.
It's in the records that folks in Galveston were waiting in the slightly higher surf and planning dinners for later in the day, 6 hours before the storm that killed 6,000 began to come in. David noting, Noah, we don't need no stinking Noah.
Oh, man.
But, let me posit one thing just for your consideration and see what you think.
Okay.
And that is this. Ron Paul. I think the man actually would like to be president of the United States. I think there's some of those people on that stage who are running for vice president.
Okay.
But I think Ron Paul really would like to. He doesn't want to be anybody's vice president. He's smarter than everybody else in the room because he's just that free. Is there any chance, do you think, that little freak might be convinced to run a third-party candidacy?
Kind of a Perot attempt.
Yeah. Because I think he's got enough weird little followers to squirrel whoever gets the Republican nomination.
I could see him getting 20% of the vote. This is genius.
Yeah.
And then maybe it's Admiral Stockdale for vice president.
Why not? Is he still around?
Another match.
Because as you note in part 5 of Looking for Work in a Cavalcade of Crazy, Admiral Stockdale was a little bemused by the fact that Ross picked him in the first place.
He was. Oh God. Yeah, I think you're onto something here. I think Paul is floating out a blimp to see if this just how many chumps he can get on the bandwagon.
And see, I got one more theory here, and it might be that I should not voice this, but I've made vague reference to it in the past, Reverbo, and that is John Huntsman. Okay, made the weird little reference to Kurt Cobain last night. No kidding. A Republican.
Good.
With a Kurt Cobain reference.
What was the reference?
It was something about no promises or false promises. What he was referencing was, I think, a Kurt Cobain song from the second album called All Promises. But he said it was a passing reference to Kurt Cobain.
Hmm.
And the polling data on John Huntsman last night, he actually scored a -1. Really.
Huh?
I don't know how you do that in public polling. among Republicans, of course.
Now, he's not a dummy either, is he?
No. And here's the fun part. What he actually is a construct. I'm convinced of this. A little bit of time travel real quick, but you're always up for some of that.
So he's been re-sleeved.
He has been re-sleeved, exactly. That's a reference to Richard K. Morgan's Altered Carbon, which I recommend that everyone read, just because it's a damn good book.
Put it on the Horn's fall book list.
Absolutely. Somebody tell Oprah. John Huntsman has been re-sleeved. Because, one, remember, John Huntsman was a member of the Obama administration. He never would have taken the job if he just despised Barack Obama. Right?
Right.
Okay. He's a former governor of Utah and was a governor of Utah during some pretty good times. So that gives him a job-creating record. He's a Mormon. Magic underwear, private planet, the works. He's also very, you know, he made a point of telling America last night that he's really hip because he's a Harley rider and he rides a dirt bike, and that's what he's going to bring to the White House with him.
Oh, no.
Okay, but work with me here. He's a construct. He's a plant.
What's his mission?
His mission is to blow up in the face of Mitt Romney. Willard Romney. Because after Rick Perry completely blows up, he'll do great in South Carolina and Iowa, but then the normal people start getting to vote.
Right, right.
And that's where Romney will get the momentum. And this is, well, and so time travel. You remember back in 2000 when the Republican National Committee gave gaggling googles of money to Ralph Nader to help keep him in the race in 2000?
No, but if you hypnotized me, I would remember that.
Right. Well, they did. And
I got to say this. Pol Pot would do really well in South Carolina, but go on.
Oh, I agree completely. The Nikki Haley. Well, Nikki Haley's a different story altogether. That little girl who wrote that story. In 2000, the Republican National Committee gave gagging amounts of money to Ralph Nader to make sure he stayed in the race, because they knew that the people who were going to vote for Ralph were not Republican voters. That he would, in fact, draw voters away from Al Gore. Well, flash forward 11 years. John Huntsman is in this field for the same or similar reasons. He's really normal. He's not just a lunatic. He talks about when the Republican Party becomes the party of anti-science, that they're pretty much toast. Which is, of course,
You're not suggesting that there's a underground, there's some sort of hidden group of reasonable, moderate Republicans who are putting him up to this.
No, I'm submitting that the Obama administration has put him up to this.
Sweet.
I mean, you know, this is downright Romulan.
So none of the nuts would ever vote for him.
But some of the relatively normal ones will.
The Romney ones, Mike.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, David in Tennessee, Pol Pot? That's Nikki Haley with an eye job and a very high-quality wig. That and diction lessons. Diction lessons from Paula Deen. Jesus.
I like this theory. This is...
Well, and the way you can test its validity, Reverbo, is see how long... Now, if Huntsman just bails out day after tomorrow with that negative one of his, which David notes, that means all the Repiglicans that hated Huntsman hate him twice as much after the pageant. You know, nothing ever stopped a Repiglican from voting twice.
No.
No, if he bows out day after tomorrow, then we know I'm completely wrong. But if he stays in for the long haul, and if he's on every ballot to the bitter daggum end, that's some high stakes, dirty, down and dirty politics being played. And it's pretty admirable, really.
It's from the other team's playbook for sure.
And then, you know, if it all works out and Obama gets reelected, well, then guess what happens? John Huntsman gets a new job inside of the administration that isn't ambassador to China. I have to do this from time to time, Reverbo. I got to go two or three moves out on the chessboard.
I like this. You think that the man has a little more integrity than to agree to such a plan, but he may have on the other hand, loyalty sometimes will trump integrity, won't it?
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, in regard to Admiral Stockdale, Sandra has an even better idea. Ron Paul and Craig T. Nelson, Freedom for All, 2012. She sent me earlier today the video of him on the Glenn Beck program from a couple of years back. It's a beautiful moment.
It is.
It is Craig T. Nelson talking to Glenn Beck and saying, and I quote, and I can't make this stuff up. Craig T. Nelson saying, what happened to society? I go into business, I don't make it. I go bankrupt. I've been on food stamps and welfare. Did anybody help me out? No. No.
Genius.
Craig T. Nelson, really and for true, said, I've been on food stamps and welfare. Did anybody help me out?
I want the government out of Medicare while we're at it. Oh, God, he's a genius. So they have, this has become very easy. There is nothing but a field full of total idiots and losers, with the exception of Willard. None of them have a prayer. And so we're just going to make sure.
Well, no, make no mistake. Rick Perry is going to bring that, but then again, Michelle Bachmann kind of peed in his punch bowl last night because she made it abundantly clear that he might sound like he's a fetus-loving, right-wing, freedom-worshipping, godly, you know, all of that. But she really did put the barb in and put it in the tender part with that business that made him up and say, you know, we up and do things down here. Made him up and say, and what a line it was. If you're suggesting that I can be bought for $5,000, I'm offended.
I wonder if these people know just how funny they are.
I didn't hear anybody laughing in the audience.
God. Well, this is gonna, I can't wait for this to all shake out. The third party. With Paul Nelson ticket, I can't wait to see what's his name again?
Huntsman.
I can't wait to see how that plays out.
Yeah, Huntsman dogging Romney to the bitter end. Because remember, it sort of slipped out of the Obama White House that their preference is to run against Romney, and when pressed for a reason. The unattributed source said, well, because he's just, well, he's weird. And Huntsman is just the guy to bring that out.
But Romney's got the scarlet letter. He's got the kiss. He's got the mark of, who's the Mormon leader? What's his name?
Smith.
He's got the mark of Smith on his forehead. He's not violent.
Well, you know, they had an illegal immigration question last night, and it got people in. And again, after a while, Rick Perry began to look like the bull in the bull ring before the matador comes out and the picadors are just working him over, putting those little barbs in his flesh. And he'd beller a little bit, and the next thing you know, he'd be sprouting another barb. And one of those barbs was about immigration and and they're talking about the Dream Act as amnesty and everything. And Willard Romney has to be a little bit quiet on that one, too. Because Willard has an illegal immigration problem.
Does he now?
Mm-hmm. Now, this requires just a little bit of history, Reverbo. Back when Utah was playing footsie with the federal government about becoming a state, the federal government said, well, that's well and good, but if you want to become a state, you're going to have to get shed of that polygamy. And there were a whole bunch of Mormons in Utah and down into Arizona who said, oh, hell no, I'm a-keeping every one of my wives. And hot-footed it for Mexico and renounced their American citizenship and became Mexicans.
No.
One of those was Willard Romney's granddaddy.
Sweet.
Willard Romney's granddaddy brought his family, including Willard Romney's daddy, George, illegally across the border. Willard Romney's granddaddy and Willard Romney's daddy were both this is their word. I like to say undocumented immigrants, but the right wing likes they were illegal aliens.
They were Mexican. They became Mexican citizens.
Yeah.
You're saying.
Yeah.
And then they came back into the United States illegally. They snuck back in.
Yep.
They snuck back in to make a fortune.
And did.
Well, how come now we haven't heard about this all over the place? Well, because the Fox and everybody wants President Romney. That's why.
Well, they're desperate for somebody that it won't just be that Obama won't just tap dance over. Because no matter what these poll numbers say right now, Reverbo, we all know that the silly season is upon us.
Yeah, he's got the unemployment problem, and he's got the stock market. All this was predictable. Everything's going to hell a year before the election. So he's got, if people think he doesn't have a battle on his hands, he has a bit of a battle. But look at who he's facing. Look at the field. There's a bunch of circus clowns out there. And Willard.
Yeah. And Jebby just sitting off in a corner somewhere going, oh, should I? There's still a little time. Oh, I could. Oh, I don't know. What would Mother think?
If the American people elect another crazy person from Texas, it really is time to just start packing your bags and deciding where to move.
Yeah, and I don't know how to do that.
Well, I kind of gave up the idea as well. I mean, like my friend says, if we could relocate, to say, I don't know, Paris or Berlin or New Zealand, that would be great.
Yeah, but none of them want us.
Right, and it's also that kind of defeats the whole purpose of we're not stretching our dollar doing that.
No, the easy, quick answer is Costa Rica.
Well, or Belize or Mexico, and there's just too many. It turned out to just be too problematic.
Yeah.
But can you imagine that? Another nut job, oil man from Texas? I mean, it's just the mind.
Yeah, and see, Romney will never be anybody's vice president.
No, I agree with you.
Rick Perry will never be anybody's vice president. So that means you've got to figure what? What kind of a ticket? Perry Bachman?
No one's going to pick her.
She's nuts.
Yeah, she's
nuts. So it's going to have to... Ooh, look, Perry Jindal.
Today he said he wouldn't do it.
Well, he endorsed Perry.
He did, but then he turned down the vice president, the presidential nominee. You know, he didn't get it yet.
Perry... Wait. Perry Nikki Haley.
How about that nut from Florida? What's his name, Ruben or something?
Rick Scott?
Yeah, she said...
Oh, Marco Rubio?
Yeah, everybody's talking about, he's got some sort of,
mojo?
I don't think so.
All we can say is it's damn fun to watch.
it is. And it's also kind of sad because the legacy of all of this is I mean, you and I, the average lifespan of American men has actually, I believe, gone down.
Yes. Yeah, well, women. Well, and throughout the Southeast and you know, places where people talk with drawls and accents, women's life expectancy has gone down.
Well, Paul wants to turn the clock back to like when people only lived to be like 52 years old. That'll work out fine in his world.
Well, there'll be more jobs now, won't there? And we won't have any damn 99ers out whining around.
Whining. But I'm just, we're all just, we don't have time to waste. Just 5 decades has been lost. To me, Christ, 12 years have been lost now. Another 12 years are down the drain. 8 with George Jr. And then this crazy stuff the last 4 years, I don't know what. I mean, things aren't any better. Could have been.
No, and there are ways to make it better, but God forbid anybody should actually work on that. I mean, every time I think about, and I mentioned it the other night, Riverboat, every time I think about the upcoming Senate race in Nebraska, I get the dry heaves. Because that's going to be Senator Ben Nelson, incumbent, allegedly a Democrat, with a rodent on his head, versus the sitting Attorney General of the state of Nebraska who refers to welfare recipients as coons.
Well, isn't that impressive?
Now, it's going to be like that because, you know, there's plenty to go around. It's going to be like that because there is no effective, progressive, or liberal, or whatever you want to call it, messaging inside the state of Nebraska. Because the Democratic National Committee is not interested in messaging inside the state of Nebraska. Now, will Progressive Democrats of America go out to Nebraska? I don't know. Will Democracy for America, that tends to get behind progressive candidates, will they get busy in Nebraska? Do they have the nerve to target, I hate that word,
yeah,
a sitting incumbent Democrat in a primary process? I don't know.
Well, you got to start going after these people if you're going to change the party. I mean,
because you know what? 6 more years of Ben Nelson does not advance the Democratic agenda in the United States Senate. Anybody who thinks it does wasn't paying attention during the Employee Free Choice Act debate. Everybody who says, well, you know, we had the House and the Senate and the President, we didn't do any damn thing. Well, you know what? Nancy Pelosi and her majority in the House got the Employee Free Choice Act lickety-split right through. Done. And it went to the Senate, and Ben Nelson, and Mary Landrieu, and Blanche Lincoln killed it.
Do you remember about 2 years ago or so, somebody murdered a couple of went into like the Democratic state Democratic headquarters
in Arkansas.
It was Arkansas?
Yes.
Okay, I was just trying to. It was not Nebraska.
No.
That was Arkansas.
And then, but there is an Arkansas story to be told, and it's worth remembering. Because it tells a little about what might happen in Nebraska, or more aptly, what might not happen, Riverbo. Disgusted Democrats stood up on their hind legs and backed a challenger to Blanche Lincoln. And they beat her ass in the primary. Labor went all in for her challenger. Because, among other things, you know, he said he would support the Employee Free Choice Act. Rahm Emanuel said they were the organized labor was, and I quote, retarded for doing that. So they beat her in the primary, and then they had to have a runoff, and she beat the other guy. She got a second bite of the apple, and she won the second time and got her ass handed to her by a teabagger. So if nothing else, you know, we're looking. You know, this is at the very. I'm not trying to be, you know, make anybody just, you know, all is lost. But you know, this is the reality. This is the totality of the circumstances.
We don't have any more time to. People just think that all. I mean, decades go by and nothing, and things just sort of get more and more and more. I hate. I mean, I'm not a doomer because I already think it had started to circle the drain 30 years ago. I just don't think people are just in denial about this.
Well, but if it's ever going to turn around, you have to put the stopper in the damn drain somewhere.
Yeah, and everybody.
And that's and I think that's what we're talking about here. You know, if
you're popular, I'm going to say the popular thing to do for a president who wins term number two is to, you know, I got nothing to lose now. Now I'll try to push my agenda forward. Well, what the hell were you doing the first 4 years?
Trying to get reelected.
I'm not getting any more attractive here.
Yeah, but the thing is, American history is replete, Reverbo, with second-term presidencies that just don't add up to much. That just don't amount to anything. Reagan's didn't.
Fine. Now that's 8 years of a guy with
right.
huge potential. Oh, man. Well, if you want me, I will be up at the Ice Palace in Montreal.
You know what? Save me a little space.
I think that wasn't a W.C. Fields line.
I believe so.
excellent conversation tonight. I'm glad I found you behind the microphone.
Well, you know, that's how it is with this on again, off again radio show that I've only been doing for, you know, a lot of years.
Yeah, I mean, you're just a lazy shit. I mean, I'm starting to say it, but
I'm going to have a talk with Ferg about these damned ankle sprains and I don't know, maybe get a little brusque with Margie about these about letting her gallbladder go bad and stuff.
I think you just have to start making it personal, right?
I'm trying actually not to in this case. I don't like to just go off on listeners.
All right. Well, I will catch you on the flip flop, as they say.
All righty.
So, go get a bottle of Yoo-Hoo.
Or maybe an upper 10.
An upper 10. Okay, man.
All right. Make it personal, Reverbo.
You too.
Bye. Op-ed correspondent Reverbo, who will not self-promote to save his life. Go forth and read. And you know what? It's now that it's all done, it is worth your effort to just read the entire Looking for Work in a Cavalcade of Crazy series. All five installments. They're there at headonradionetwork.com. This is nothing short of brilliant satire, gorgeous writing, and if you don't belly laugh a little bit here and there along the way, well, I can't help you. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. An email from our pal Andy out in California with regard to Mark's email. And he says, Mr. Bob, your email from Mark in Japan seems way, way over the top. Mark, let's be reasonable. Bob has been milquetoast. Okay, I'm going to let that one slide, Andy. Bob has been milquetoast compared to what you'd get from me for 3 hours about President Obama. I think Bob bends over backwards and forwards for President Not Sure, giving the President plenty of slack. Remember, President Not Sure did have majorities in the House and Senate and did very little. His mantra was to grasp onto Republican policies and talking points from the word go, not pushing the ideals of FDR or the disreputable cantankerous progressives. No, I think Bob's been very complimentary and supportive of the president, even though I don't believe he deserves it. Hey, Mark, Chicago school, baby. Chicago school, as Bob has surmised, Mr. Obama is being the leader he wants to be. No FDR Democrat would ever propose a 50% cut to the Social Security payroll tax from 12.4% to 6.2%. 3.1% employer side, 3.1% employee side, no matter how bad the economy. Once the Republicans get their Social Security payroll tax cut, Grover Norquist will make sure it never gets resurrected. The Republicans and third-way Democrats are on the path to privatize Social Security or scale it back, just like the administration is doing to the EPA with the ozone clean air standards, bringing us back to the smog-filled 1960s. There's a lot of truth in what he... I can't pretend that Obama is somebody that he's not. But I will sit here and tell you straight up, you know, and I get shit for this, that I know what I'm going to do in November 2012, because I'm going to be handed the same old crap sandwich that you get every presidential election. A mainstream candidate A or a mainstream candidate B, in which case, and in one instance, the mainstream isn't really, it's made up of lunatics. Andy adding, concerning Senator Ben Nelson, if you tried to remove Ben Nelson, Warren Buffett's insurance guy in the Senate of Nebraska, the third wave or DLC Democrats will come to his rescue. Yeah, that's the reality. Mr. Obama would also come to Senator Ben Nelson's aid, too. Because if one incumbent falls, the proletariat might get the idea everyone is vulnerable to a challenge, and we can't have that. No, indeedy. President, not sure, likes his job. Thanks, Andy. By the way, did you see the story the other day about this, this creep? Oh, God, What is his name? It'll only take me a second. He has introduced a bill in the House of Representatives that would defund an environmental justice internship at the EPA. See, environmental justice is what they call it when dumbass hillbillies like me have the guts to stand up, and God, so many more who have so much more guts, have the nerve to stand up against multi-billion-dollar, poisonous, murderous industries like coal and demand that we stop being poisoned. They call it environmental justice. And over at EPA, they've got this little itsy bitsy little fellowship internship thing. And Mike Pompeo, who is a Republican from Kansas, and who is a sock puppet for Koch Industries, he is their number one guy, has introduced H.R. 2876 to kill the Environmental Justice Eco Ambassador Program. It's an internship program, as I noted, that goes to graduate students and deals with the connections between economic disparities, discrimination, and environmental health. In other words, deals with the fact that they don't put coal ash dumps or coal-fired power plants or mountaintop removal operations next to, oh, I don't know, Senator Jay Rockefeller's house, and instead put them next to mine. Or Vernon's. Or Bo's. Or Debbie's. Or Junior's. All the people who live in the Central Appalachian Sacrifice Zone. My pal Mickey McCoy. Hey, everybody, by the way, look up Metro Billy, M-E-T-R-O, B-I-L-L-Y on Facebook, and just go like it. It'll tickle Mickey senseless. He's just set up a little sandwich shop there in Inez, Kentucky, and he calls it Metro Billy. But anyway, Mike Pompeo said, at a time when millions of Americans cannot find work and are saddled with record deficits and crippling environmental regulations, spending $6,000, that's what the graduate student gets, $6,000. Ooh, jeebus, don't spend it all in one place, pal. spending $6,000 of taxpayer money per student to act as tools of this administration's radical policies is clearly not acceptable, nor is it ever the role of the federal government to indoctrinate. Here's what it means to be a radical. This is the application requirement. Applicants must have previously been involved and or have a strong interest in environmental justice, social justice issues, and or environmental health disparities in an academic, volunteer, and or employment setting. See, that's what I mean. They're deliberately creating spots inside the EPA for them little nasty tree-hugging hippies to come in and pollute our capitalist godly way of lives.